Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, let's go to Washington now for one of the most extraordinary handovers of power in American history. 8 years after he was first sworn in as president, promising to end decades of what he termed American carnage, and 4 years after his supporters stormed the US Capitol to frustrate the Democratic transfer of power, today Donald Trump will be sworn in as the 47th president of the United States. Addressing a rally of supporters last night, he promised a raft of executive orders within hours of taking office, including pardons for those January 6th rioters.
Tomorrow at noon, the curtain closes on 4 long years of American decline, and we begin a brand new day of American strength and prosperity, dignity and pride. We're going to stop the invasion of our borders. We're going to reclaim our wealth. We're going to unlock the liquid gold that's right under our feet, liquid gold. We're going to bring back law and order to our cities. We're going to restore patriotism to our schools, get radical left woke ideologies the hell out of our military and out of our government. And we are going to make America great again.
Well, the rally was also addressed by a key Trump ally, one of the world's richest people, Elon Musk, who spoke briefly.
We're looking forward to making a lot of changes, and you know, this victory is the start, really. What matters going forward is to actually make significant changes, cement those changes. And set the foundation for America to be strong for centuries, forever.
Elon Musk. Well, let's get the latest now. We're joined by David Blevin, Sky News correspondent, who's in Washington at the White House right now. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Claire.
David, we've heard a lot about the weather. We know that most of this now has been brought indoors today. How bad is it?
It's -6 right now, but with the wind chill, feels -10. So it's been a wise decision, I think, to move this event indoors. It's the first time in 40 years that has happened. 1985, Ronald Reagan's second inauguration. On that occasion, when it dropped to -14, that's when they last took the ceremony indoors. And I have to say, Claire, they do it with good historical reason. Back in 1840, there was a president who died just 1 month after inauguration because he caught pneumonia giving his inauguration address.
Okay, well, it makes sense, although there will be some elements later on outside. Is that right?
Yes, I think there will be a short procession by the President and First Lady. They're not revealing that for security reasons at this point, but there are literally tens of thousands of people who are bitterly disappointed because they've made the journey to Washington to express their support for Donald Trump. And they've been moved to the Capital One arena where the rally took place last night, and they are being told that's where the President will go in due course. In fact, that may be where he signs some of these executive orders that he has vowed to sign on day one.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the rally that you mentioned last night, because it was fairly extraordinary. You had everyone there from Elon Musk to the village people. What were the headline clues, David, that you picked up when it comes to what to expect from Donald Trump, and in particular those executive orders that you mentioned, which we believe will be done starting today?
To be honest, it felt like a parallel universe at times, watching Donald Trump dancing on the stage alongside the village people. But we have to now take him at face value. We have to take him seriously. At 12 noon today, he will not be the Republican candidate. He will not be the president-elect. He will be back in the office of President of the United States, leader of the free world. And he has momentum. He has a mandate. And for the first time, really, he has a significant team around him. Back 8 years ago, it all felt very chaotic. This time it feels different. The vibe is different. And I think, Claire, that is what is fueling the ambition. On the first day of his first term, he signed one single executive order relating to healthcare. This time he has vowed to sign up to 200 executive orders, and there were clear hints during that rally about the direction of travel in both foreign and domestic policy. At home, he's talking, for example, about the potential to pardon or at least commute the sentences of those who were convicted for their role in the raid of the Capitol building back in January 6th, when he, of course, was still disputing the outcome of the 2020 election. And then in terms of foreign policy, well, he's talking about 25% tariffs on neighbours like Mexico and Canada. And he's also talking about the greatest deportation of illegal migrants in US history. There are 11 million undocumented migrants in the United States. The enormity of that just couldn't be exaggerated.
And how quickly could those promised trade tariffs be introduced, David? Do we know at this point?
No, we don't know for sure, but because Donald Trump has this mandate, I think, and because he has a team around him, there is the expectation that he's going to move very quickly and that he has the executive authority to do so. He has brought a huge number of people onto his side, if you like. The election result was quite staggering, but really, in many ways, the election's over and it's now down to business. He's going to have to show those people that he's going to keep these promises. And of course, he has already to some extent demonstrated that by claiming credit for what's been going on in the Middle East. The peace deal, for example, the foundation was led by Joe Biden's administration. The momentum for that created by the ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon. And Joe Biden drafted this proposal back in May of last year. But of course, Donald Trump is saying it would never have happened. These three hostages would not have been released yesterday had it not been for his victory back in November.
Mm-hmm. His relationship with Elon Musk, I mean, we've all been fascinated by it, but it was just extraordinary last night to see him bring Elon Musk onto the stage and not his own family.
Yeah, and what is also extraordinary is that they had to cut the programme short because they were running late. And the element, one of the elements that was cut was a speech by the Vice President-elect J.D. Vance. So that again fuels this sense that Elon Musk is vice president, so to speak, or is co-president, perhaps. The fact that he bounces back onto the stage and attempts to deliver a speech. He was rather inarticulate, it has to be said. But and many people are asking how long that relationship can last. It's a good question, because Donald Trump, for example, last time around went through five different secretaries of Homeland Security. And when they came to office, they were wonderful. And when they left office, they were the worst in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think the answer to the question is how long the relationship lasts depends on how long they each have to gain something, or when do they begin to lose. Because it's in Donald Trump's interest to have a trillionaire in his camp supporting him, but it's also in Elon Musk's interest, of course, to be heading a government department and therefore choosing who has oversight of his massive business empire.
Yeah, it certainly is. David, we'll leave you to the very cold Washington where you are this morning. Do look after yourself over the course of the next few hours, and thank you very much for your time.
No problem.
David Blevins there. Well, we're also joined here in the studio by Graham Finlay, who's lecturer in the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD. Graham, you're very welcome and thank you for being with us. Now, some of the themes that will feature prominently over Donald Trump's second presidency are clear now, particularly in light of that rally that he had last night. The culture wars will certainly be close to the top of the list. He spoke a lot about that last night, in particular in relation to the military, right?
Yeah, we should be looking for elements of culture war rhetoric in his inaugural address. But yes, I mean, it was culture wars which got him into the White House. Sort of various ads attacking trans people. And again, the woke military did very well for him in the closing stages of the election. And when we see Pete Hegseth looking like to be confirmed as Secretary of Defense, whose entire identity is based on de-wokeifying the military, You know, getting rid of all the diversity, equity, and inclusion programming they accuse it of having, and getting back to, really focusing on frontline troops or warfighters, as he calls them.
Yeah, they showed a video last night which appeared to mock trans people in the context of bringing the military back and away from these woke values that they claim it has had. So that is going to play an important role, you think, in this presidency, or certainly be signalled as something that they're paying great attention to?
No, it's something we've seen in other Republican jurisdictions like Florida. Again, you'll see quite heavy-handed interference with corporations and their diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, you know, a real rollback on any kind of rights for people who are members of minorities. And we've already seen a lot of that happen. In many ways, you know, the overturning of Roe v. Wade was like the ultimate culture war victory for the conservative, cultural conservatives of the Republican Party. That obviously was fairly problematic from an electoral point of view, but it's an area they feel like they can succeed on, and it's the area that their voters probably, with the exception of immigration, want to see action on the most.
Okay, so just interesting there to hear David say that there's a certain resignation now to Donald Trump and what he might do, given the scale of his victory, but also the fact that he has the tech bros very much on board now. Do you agree with that? So if you look at the prospect of him signing pardons or commuting sentences tonight, live on stage for the Jan 6th people who were convicted in the aftermath of that day, do you expect that there won't be any pushback to that move?
There doesn't seem to be a lot of pushback either in the Democratic Party or among sort of activists. I mean, the fact is he won the popular vote, and that's a very different mandate than what he had in 2016. The other thing which is going in his favor is, a lot of polls which have come out recently show that many American voters approve of his policies, even if they don't approve of Donald Trump himself. Mm-hmm. And so some of the executive orders we're going to see will involve immigration and the mass deportations he promised during the campaign. And 60% of voters polled in this recent New York Times poll approve of deporting at least immigrants who have committed, irregular immigrants who've committed crimes. And so there's a huge amount of support for his policies, and that's really going to give him more effectiveness.
Okay, let's look at his other picks now for his cabinet, which gives us some clues as to the direction of his presidency. The Director of National Intelligence and the Head of the Office of Management and Budget. So tell us what you glean from those appointments.
Yeah, well, there's probably about four appointees, including Pete Hegseth for defense, who are really controversial, who might be pushed back against. Russell Vought is trying to return as head of the Office of Management and Budget. Now, this is not the most exciting role, and he's not the most famous person, but he's one of the architects of Project 2025, and he is really going to be in charge of the purse strings. And he's pushing a very, very controversial legal interpretation, which is that the president doesn't have to spend money which Congress has appropriated for particular purposes. If he does that, he can, hand in glove with Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy at the Department of Government Efficiency, really try to impose these kind of swinging cuts, which Trump is looking for, just by the power of the pen. That's going to be really, really controversial. That's going to get a lot of pushback. But that's an area where they can do a lot very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And then we have Mike Johnson, who is the Speaker of the House. How would you characterize how he's been working with Trump thus far?
He's sort of been giving Trump more or less whatever he wants in return for Trump's endorsement to be Speaker. One of the few things which is going to hold up the Trump agenda is Mike Johnson's weakness in the House. It's a little inside baseball, but he's got a two-seat majority, which means if one Republican goes over and votes with the Democrats, the measure falls. Mm-hmm. And he's just alienated one of the more powerful Republicans by Mike Turner by denying him the chair of the Intelligence Committee. Turner is extremely angry, has not been showing up for votes. So that razor-thin majority, which Mike Johnson has, is going to prevent him from doing anything aggressive because he just has to pick off a couple Republicans. But Mike Johnson owes his position to Trump. He's been taking calls from Mar-a-Lago, including to remove Mike Turner as head of the Intelligence Committee. And so he had a hard enough time before governing, and it's going to be very difficult now.
Right, but that sounds like a dumb move, though, to annoy Mike Turner if your majority is so thin.
It does seem like a dumb move, but I mean, there's more to it than just a call from Trump saying get rid of Mike Turner, because Mike Turner represents Springfield, Ohio, which people will recall was the basis of the place of allegations of various immigrants eating people's pets, which mm-hmm. none of which turned out mm-hmm. to be true. But there's more to it. There's a bit of a power play within the Republican Party, but also a policy question. I mean, Turner's a very hawkish Republican, whereas it looks like Trump's foreign policy is going to be not dovish exactly, but more isolationist. And so, you know, but you can't afford to alienate anybody when you're that close.
Right. So tell me more about the foreign policy and why you expect it to be characterized in the way you have just said, isolationist.
Yeah, I mean, Trump's foreign policy is based on his sense that, you know, either you're getting screwed or you're screwing someone. And he's always about the bargaining and all about getting the best deal. And his understanding of the best deal isn't always, you know, much less than just dollars and cents, right? You know, who's paying us? You know, what are we paying them? As opposed to American interests worldwide. So what we're going to see is what we've seen thus far is a series of ultimatums, the most extreme position being put out there as a bargaining tactic. And, you know, Europe and the rest of the world will have to respond. Now, the good news, I suppose, is that we are bargaining here. It's not just a random threat. So that if Trump gets what he wants, or at least perceives that he's got what he wants, you can do a deal. So you're mm-hmm. still in a rational sort of space. And this has worked really well for Trump in the past. He was complaining about the North American Free Trade Agreement. And so he threatened and cajoled Canada and Mexico into what he saw as a better agreement, which would improve auto workers' lives in the United States. And so, you know, there is a rational foreign policy there. It's going to be very, very bad for Ukraine and for any other allies of the United States who can't deliver some kind of deal for Trump.
We still don't know, though, what his position is going to be or how he's going to handle the war in Ukraine. I saw him mentioning it again last night, his plan and his promise and commitment to end that war. But we don't know how he's going to go about doing that, do we?
We don't. I think it's going to be pretty simple. I think he's going to put Zelensky in a really, really bad position because, again, he doesn't want to spend money. Right. And there's a lot of resentment in his party about the flows of aid to Ukraine. And again, this has a culture war aspect in the sense that, you know, it's become more bought up with sort of people's self-image or the image of Ukraine, which is being put forward on, among other things, Elon Musk's X, you know, rather than, you know, the benefits of having your one of your main adversaries weakened. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, you will see a very, very stark sort of choice being given to the Ukrainians, which they won't have much choice but to take. And that's obviously good for Putin. It gets us back to, in some ways, to Tulsi Gabbard, who's another one of these very controversial picks as director of national intelligence. She is seen as way too close, both ideologically and in terms of her personal relationships, to the former dictator of Syria, Assad, and to Russia. And again, that's a culture war view of how foreign policy should be conducted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there's question marks over how he now views Vladimir Putin as well, because there was a sense that he felt Putin was weakened after what happened in Syria and that Donald Trump might have lost some respect for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's always tricky. Donald Trump is always managing these sort of relationships. That's why I think he gets along so well with the tech bros, because it's all about, you know, the personal relationship and their image of them. He hasn't been talking about Putin a lot lately, mm-hmm. But he still talks about what a good relationship he has with him. And if this, he sees this as the unique skill he can bring to making a deal, I think we'll see him make the deal. He might not be quite so full of praise for Putin, but in the end, Putin is going to get what he wants.
Well, listen, the one thing we do know is that today is going to be a very eventful day, isn't it? The next couple of hours. Graham, thank you very much for coming in. That's Graham Finlay.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.